They were about an hour out of the Utopia system at the runabout's rather pokey maximum warp, with the lights dialed down to relaxingly dim and some pleasant strings on the overhead, winding down from the afternoon's excitement. Caden was up front, keeping an eye on the autopilot, while Shepard sat at the wardroom table to see what she could do about her armor. The answer, she'd glumly concluded after some fooling around with a roll of 100-mile-an-hour tape and an old WDF-issue polycarbon patch kit, was not much. The suit was, to use a technical term, trashed. There wasn't a single plate on it that wasn't at least badly scratched, with most of the bigger ones fractured and the plastron all but caved in outright. The right side of the main plate was still in fairly good shape, but the only thing holding the left half together was the webbing understructure, which was about as protective as the novelty physics nerd t-shirt, entropy isn't what it used to be, she'd had on underneath it. "This is hopeless," she remarked. "I'm sure there are other suits of armor available," Caden replied dryly. "Yeah, but I'm used to this model, and they never started making it again when the WDF restarted," Shepard complained. "I mean, I don't think I'd be so pissed about it if I could get another. While you were getting your return paperwork done, I had to go rob my own grave to get this one." Caden held up a hand in a one-moment please gesture, set the autopilot signaler to pilot away from controls mode, then swiveled his seat to face her. "Seriously," he said. Shepard nodded. "Well, not really a grave, per se. I mean, I was vaporized. But, you know, empty tomb with my name on it anyway." She taped part of the shattered chest plate, flexed it a few times, and sighed. "I think it was my spare back in the day. Last time I saw it, Liara was in it, so I'm guessing it was her who buried it in lieu of, well, me." Caden looked thoughtful. "It took us months to regroup after the Normandy went down. She must have done it then. She never talked about what she'd done in between. Where was it, just out of curiosity?" "Therum." With a nod, Caden said, "Of course. You don't have a home world, so it makes sense she'd go back to where you met." He gave his old shipmate a speculative look for a moment. "Are you going to look her up now that you're back?" Shepard met his gaze for a long moment, then looked away and sighed. "I don't know," she admitted. "It's been 118 years. I didn't really think any of that through when I decided to come back." "Nobody move," said another voice, and both Shepard and Caden looked up to see that their guest, who they'd stretched out on the shelf bunk at the back of the crew cabin, was up and covering them with her sidearm. Shepard didn't seem particularly impressed by that, even though she wasn't even wearing her hopelessly compromised armor. She looked calmly back past the PPG pistol's muzzle, locking her eyes on the young Earth Force troopers. When she spoke, her voice was low, mild, and yet laced with a thread of undeniable menace. "Kid, bad things happen to people who point guns at me." Arna held the pose for a second or so more, then relented, powering down the weapon and putting it away. "Sorry," she said, letting herself back down onto the bunk. She shook her head. "Who are you people? What did you mean about your own grave? What's going on?" Shepard smiled a touch ruefully. "Oh, man, would you ever not believe me if I told you?" she said. "I just saw an unknown alien starship the size of an Arcology completely clean out a Stage 1 colony," Arna replied. "You'll have to work pretty hard to top that." Shepard's smile became a faint smirk. "Okay, you asked for it," she said. "I'm Commander Virginia Shepard, Wedge Defense Force, deceased. I was killed in action against Genom in 2288. Now I'm one of the Valkyrie, warrior women of Valhalla, Norse mythology. Look it up in your own time. And I've come back to the mortal world to help my old pal, the chief of the international police, deal with all the craziness that's going down in the galaxy lately. Angling a thumb over her shoulder at her colleague, she added, "This is Caden. Been my right-hand man since forever, except for the 50 or so years when I was dead and he wasn't. Speaking of which, did I hear you right back on Eden Prime? Did you say your name's Alenko?" "What?" said Caden. Arna blinked, still trying to process what she'd been told before the unexpected question, then said, "Yes." It seemed to occur to her then, what Shepard had said in the middle of her speech, the part about working for the chief of the IPO, and the young soldier stiffened perceptibly. "Alenko, Arna V, Lieutenant, Earth Force Marine Corps, 68-Charlie-59-8824. Shepard laughed casually. "Relax, Lieutenant. We're not actually at war at the moment," she said. "You've been rescued, not taken prisoner. Anyway, I ask because this charming young man I have with me here is also called Alenko, and I'm trying to figure out if you're related. Given your first name, I'm guessing yes. There can't be that many Ukrainian families with a tradition of giving girls a Quarian name." Caden got up from the pilot's seat and walked slowly around Shepard's chair, regarding Arna thoughtfully. With her helmet off, he could see the resemblance. She had the same thick, dark hair, not quite raven black like Shepard's, but a very dark brown, and what had more than once been jokingly called the classic Alenko chin. He could quite easily believe that she was related to him. She, in turn, got, a bit unsteadily, to her feet and approached him, looking intently at his face.
It can't be," she said. "You look like my great-grandfather. I've seen the family hollows, but he's dead. He died long, long before I was born, during the First Corporate War."
Caden nodded. "Horizon, your grandfather must have been Jeffrey. You have his eyes." Arna drew back, startled.
Yes. I'm named after his sisters. My father's aunts."
"Arna and Virginia," Caden finished for her. She sat back down again, putting her left hand to her temple.
"This is insane."
"I told you you wouldn't believe me," Shepard replied matter-of-factly. The younger Alenko shook her head, pulling herself together with a visible effort. She looked up, meeting Shepard's gaze again, and said,
"And you say you're working for the IPO?"
"Well, working for is kind of a stretch," Shepard told her. "It's all very informal at the moment. More like I'm doing Griff a favor. We go way back, and this colony disappearance thing needed looking into."
"But the EA has rejected the International Police Accord," Arna interrupted.
"Yeah, but the chief hasn't rejected the people of the EA," Caden told her. "This isn't about governments, it's about people who need help."
Arna's brow furrowed. "The galaxy's changed a lot while you've been gone. Why would you stick your necks out like that?"
Shepard shrugged, smirking. "Why not? I'm not quitting. Think I'm a change up my style just to fit in?" Arna tried for a few seconds to take that on board, then sat back and rubbed her temples with both hands for a second before asking,
"Okay, so now what?"
"Now we report to the man, and between us we'll try to figure out what to do next." Gesturing to her shattered armor, Shepard went on, "I mean, clearly this problem calls for more than just me, Caden, and this little tiny ship. But I'll tell you this, we're sure not going to just leave it alone."
"Which brings us to our first problem," Caden added.
"I mean, we're not kidnappers, but if we send you back to the EA when we reach civilization again, we have to know you're not going to bring Earth Force down on top of us while we're trying to work." Arna thought about that for a second, then looked her ancestor in the face and said, "Then bring me with you." "Beg pardon?" he said. "Let me help you. You've seen me fight. You know I can hold my own. As far as my superiors know, I was lost with everyone else on Eden Prime. Let them keep thinking so. Eventually, we'll either resolve the situation, and I can deal with the fallout then, or it won't matter." Shepard thought for a moment, then asked, "You sure you want to do that? I'm not going to lie to you. This thing shows every sign of developing into a pan-galactic clusterfuck." "Oh, sure, but you're fine with taking me into it," Caden Mok grumbled. "More to the point, if we get caught and you're part of our team, you're going to have even harder questions to answer than we are," Shepard went on. "That's a risk I'm willing to take," Arna replied. "If you're going to keep after those things, then you're the best chance I've got to get something back for my unit. You saw how well Earth Force did against them." Shepard regarded her gravely for a few seconds, then nodded. "Okay, you're in." Then, with a wry smile, she added, "Don't come crying to me if we all end up going back to Valhalla in a giant fireball." Reached by Holocom, Griffin took the news that they'd acquired an Earth Force recruit with what Arna read as faintly surprised equanimity, then told them that, based on their own reports and other information he'd received, they'd better skip the return to Babylon 6 and head straight for New Avalon. "I'll meet you at Matthew's Memorial," he said. "Hopefully we'll still be able to keep your mission on the QT, but regardless, we're obviously in much deeper poodoo than we originally thought, and the resources you need aren't at B6. Caden punched a few keys on the navicomputer. "Okay. Course recomputed. New ETA, about 1400 hours Wednesday." "I'll see you there. Griffin out." After the chief's image disappeared, Caden, Arna, and Shepard stood looking at each other for a few moments, slightly at a loss. Then Arna said wryly, "Wednesday? Wish I'd had time to pack a bag. I don't suppose this ship has laundry machines." "Nope, sorry," Shepard replied. "But I'll tell you a little trick I picked up when I used to be with Exploration Command. If you've got to spend a few days without a change of clothes, just don't get undressed before you get into the sonic shower." Arna raised a skeptical eyebrow. "Seriously?" "Oh yeah," Caden agreed. "Old spacer's trick. Surprised you haven't heard it before." "I'm a Gropo," she told him. "The only time I'm ever in space for more than a few hours is on a troop ship, and they have, you know, facilities." "Well, it works," Shepard said, stepping past the young trooper and clapping her on the shoulder as she passed, "as you'll see presently." She paused in the doorway to the runabout's tiny fresher, leaned back to catch Arna's eye, and added, "Oh yeah, pro tip. Make sure you're not wearing anything that heats up when exposed to ultrasound." She rolled her eyes and, just before the door closed behind her, said, "Learned that lesson the hard way." Arna looked from the door to her ancestor, who spread his hands in a don't-ask-me gesture. "Outside my field of expertise," he said, and returned to the cockpit. Wednesday, August 2nd, 2406. Ryan Matthews Memorial Spaceport, New Avalon, Zeta Cygni. The Eden Prime team, such as it was, landed at Matthews Memorial discreetly, out at the far corner of the field where their unusual craft would attract no notice. From the secluded spot where they stashed the stealth runabout, it was a short hike to reach Hangar 19 and slip in through a side door. Inside, Shepard paused for a moment to admire the gleaming alloy disc of a Corellian light freighter that was parked inside. Then the door of the small office that was set up, building within building fashion, in the corner opened, and Griffin emerged to meet them. "Chief," said Shepard with a smiling nod. "Jin," he said, then nodded to the man with her. Caden, glad you both made it back in one piece. He turned to the slightly bewildered-looking young woman with them. This must be our Earth Force survivor. Yep. Lieutenant Arna Olenko, meet President Clark's favorite guy. When Arna just stood there looking at Griffin, Shepard nudged her with an elbow and prompted, Well, go on, he doesn't bite. Then, with a smirk, she added, Uninvited. Hey now, Griffin protested mildly, shooting her a look. Then he turned to Arna and said, Welcome to New Avalon, Lieutenant. I'm sorry to hear about what happened to your outfit on Eden Prime. Your government and I may not see eye to eye at the moment, but whatever you may have been told, I don't like to think of myself as an enemy of Earth. I mean, if nothing else, I was born there. That's never going to change. Arna considered that for a moment, then nodded warily. Thanks, she said. Come on in, you three, Griffin said, gesturing them into the office. It was a nondescript space, the kind of slightly ramshackle office a person would expect to find in any ordinary civilian spaceport hangar. Arna found herself faintly disappointed by that as he led them through the main room and down a short corridor. We've got a lot to take care of. To get you started, Griffin went on, I've taken the liberty of lining up a point man for you. Someone I think you can trust. He punched a code into the door at the end of the hall, then bowed her through ahead of him. The room beyond that door was much more the sort of thing Arna had been expecting, a sleek, high-tech briefing room that wouldn't have seemed out of place in a spy vid. There was a man waiting for them in that room. Tall, slim, and Turian, he wore the distinctive blue and black armor of an International Police Tactical Division special operative. At the sight of Shepard, he smiled as much as a Turian could smile, and said casually, Shepard, long time. Shepard pulled up short and blinked at him, an expression of straight-up delight coming onto her face. Garrus! She cried, then took one bounding stride and hugged him, heedless of the plating of his armor. You old bastard! I've been waiting for you in Valhalla for years, she went on, joking to cover up some of the emotion. How have you managed to make it this long? Garrus Vakarian hadn't gone into this meeting cold. Griffin had told him his old commander was back in circulation. He'd been psyching himself up for hours, and still he found himself nearly choking up at the sight and sound of her. They'd never gotten around to taking that oft-joked-about expedition to the Wallace line, but there had been a time when this woman, human or not, was the most important sapient being in his life. And right now it felt as though that time was the previous afternoon. Clean living, he replied. And weird science. Shepard leaned back a bit to study his face, of which she had once known every angle and plane. Eyes wide, she reached up to run her fingertips gently along the right side of his jaw, which was crisscrossed with old, thoroughly healed but plainly evident scars. What happened here? She asked, less flippantly. Garrus shrugged slightly. Zigged when I should have zagged, you should have seen the other guy, etc., etc., ages ago. How are you not dead? Not that I'm complaining. Long story, Shepard said, finally turning him loose. Short version is, I punched a god. Garrus would have raised an eyebrow if he'd had any. You know what? I have zero trouble believing that, he said. Looking past her, he saw Caden and grinned a Turian grin, stepping forward to have his hand pumped and exchange some manly backslaps. Caden, you're looking well for a dead man, he remarked. Shepard pulled some strings, said Caden. You know how it is. I seem to recall, Garrus replied, nodding. Who's your friend? Oh, you're going to love this, Shepard put in. This is Arna. She's Caden's great-granddaughter, and at the moment she's officially dead too. We're a regular ghost brigade on this job so far. Garrus turned and regarded the young soldier with a thoughtful look. You don't say. Jeff's granddaughter?
Uh-huh, Caden confirmed. Garrus looked more closely. Is that an Earth Force uniform?
He glanced at the chief. Has this already gotten complicated? He asked wryly.
Arna looked from Garrus to Griffin, then began,
She hesitated, then blurted,
Look, I'm a soldier, not a diplomat. The whole situation with you in the dome, that's way above me. But these aliens...
She shook her head.
All I'm trying to say is, as long as your people are straight with me, we're not going to have a problem, okay?
Off to the side, Garrus leaned toward Caden and murmured, Ooh, I like her. She's feisty.
Caden just rolled his eyes.
Griffin nodded. Okay.
Arna had apparently expected the negotiations to be harder than that. She opened her mouth as if to launch a second salvo, closed it again, thought for a second, and then said,
That's it?
That's it, Griffin replied. Besides, he added with a slightly dark smile, if you do have a problem on this mission, it's going to be with Commander Shepard, not me. In which case, Grodd help you.
Then, without giving her time to think that over, he crossed to the briefing table and fired up the holojector.
Now, here's what we know about what you're up against. Vision and Dr. Burke have cross-referenced the footage from your combat optics with every database they could get into, which is basically all of them, and we have an ID on the aliens you encountered on Eden Prime. An image of one of the insectoid creatures, pulled from the visual buffer of Shepard's Kuashi targeting visor, filled half of the holo field. The other was taken up with a somewhat grainier image of a very similar creature, the colors slightly desaturated. There was a date stamp in the lower right corner of the second image, 2342.01.05. This is one of the few verified images of an alien species the Federation Office of Galactic Affairs lists as Uncontacted Species 2214. Apart from that, the only name we have for them is Collectors, Griffin told them. You might have heard of them.
Shepard's brow furrowed. The Collectors? I thought they were a myth. Something parents on the frontier used to scare their kids into line. Eat your vegetables, or the Collectors will come and take you away.
They're real enough, Griffin said. They lurk out beyond the frontier and only occasionally come into known space. Usually it's to trade tech with merc bands or crime syndicates. They do a nice line in bio-cybernetic augmentations. We think those vat-grown big fire ninja shock troops have collector tech in them.
Trade tech for what? Caden asked.
It varies. Never the same thing twice in any of the relatively few documented exchanges we could find records for. The people who usually deal with them don't make a habit of writing this stuff down, you understand.
Griffin paged through several screens depicting various fragmentary records ferreted out of computers around the galaxy.
They're called the Collectors because they seem to, well, collect stuff. Artifacts from ancient civilizations, records of scientific research, occasionally life forms.
He looked around at the little group, his face grave, sometimes sentient.
They're collecting whole towns now, Shepard pointed out.
Oh yeah, that reminds me.
She unslung her duffel bag from her shoulder, put it on the conference table, unzipped it, and dug around inside it, taking out pieces of her broken armor and setting them aside as she hunted.
Come on, where'd I put it?
Griffin picked up one of the broken plates of her armor. This has seen better days, he remarked. Shepard looked up from the bag, then returned to delving.
Yeah, had a little argument with some kind of concussion weapon, she said. And a wall, and the ground.
Aha! Here we are.
She straightened up with the broken remains of the bug-like thing she'd killed on Eden Prime in her hand.
See what your science guys make of this, she said, giving it to Griffin. There were whole swarms of these things all over the place when we got there.
The Collectors use them to seek out and paralyze people, Arna explained. Which explains why the previous colonies they've hit seem to have gone down without a fight. I think my unit was the first real military outfit they'd encountered. Local militias probably don't have barriers strong enough to keep those things at bay. Griffin frowned. This just keeps getting weirder, he said. As far as we can determine, they've never operated on anything like this kind of scale before. Certainly no one has ever reported encountering anything like these... He looked down at the bug. Things, or the ship you saw, or the phenomenon you reported with the collector who spoke to you. These are all factors that are going to require careful handling, the ship in particular. Shaking his head, he went on, I don't know what's made them step up their game like this, but whatever the reason, they have to be stopped. He gestured to the 2342 image. Digging deeper in this latest info sweep, James and Vision came up with the first reasonable estimate of the EA's losses so far. Counting the 8,524 people on Eden Prime, it looks like the collectors may have taken upward of 50,000 people since launching this... What else would you call it, really? This offensive. This thing is starting to shape up into a war. Shepard folded her arms across her chest. If it is a war, I'm going to need an army. Or a few really, really good people. Griffin nodded. I know. I've got you a few leads. He handed Shepard a datapad, then went on. Rather than broadcast that you're back, I figured it'd be better to let you handle the notifications yourself. Shepard took the datapad and thumbed through the first couple of pages. As she read, a faint smile came to her face. I think I can do that, she said. As for the rest of the resources you'll need, said Griffin, I've got people working on that, but we'll need a few more hours. Handing Shepard a ring with an old-fashioned metal key on it, he went on, Head into town and get started. Meet me back here after dinner. I should have everything ready to go by then. Shepard looked down at the key ring he'd given her, then back at his face, a smirk stealing onto her own. Skuld sent it over, the chief explained. Figured you might need some wheels. Grinning, Shepard tossed the key in the air and caught it again. Thanks, boss, she said. Come on, you guys. Road trip. Arna hesitated for a moment, then followed the others out. Shepard led the way out of the hangar and around to the back, and there, parked by the chain-link fence, was... Well... It was an automobile, Arna knew that much, but it was unlike any she'd ever seen before. Huge, blocky-fronted, but with a waistline that swooped to a sharply raked rear screen, it was trimmed with chrome in a way that the cars she was familiar with were not, and it seemed to exude a faint air of menace. Part of that was because it was painted the deepest, glossiest black she'd ever seen, apart from a wide, white-trimmed red stripe that ran, to the right of the center line, from the front of the hood, up over the roof, and to the end of the deck lid. All aboard, Shepard said. Opening the enormous driver's door, she reached in and tilted the driver's seat, which resembled nothing so much as a massively overstuffed office chair, or possibly a small settee, covered in heavily quilted black leather, forward to provide access to the back seat. Arna walked around the back of the car, taking it in from every possible angle. Between the taillights, below a chrome-rimmed logo that reminded her of a targeting reticle, the word Marauder was picked out in archaic chrome script. Shotgun, Garrus declared a half-second before Caden, who conceded his defeat graciously and climbed into the cavernous back seat with his descendant. There would easily have been room for a third person back there. It was like sitting at opposite ends of a sofa. Arno looked questioningly at Caden. He shrugged in reply. Shepard slid behind the wheel, closed her door with a satisfying heavy metal clunk, slotted the key, and started the engine, which gave out a deep internal combustion burble. A green indicator lamp glowed to life on the instrument panel, between the wide horizontal speedometer and the analog clock. From her place in the back, which felt like it was about a quarter mile from the dash, Arna could just make out that it said Passive Laser Restraint System. With a very satisfied smile, Shepard settled into her plushly padded seat, put the gearshift into drive, and they were off, sedately enough at first as they cleared the spaceport, but then faster and faster on the approach to Highway 29. "Where are we headed?" Garrus asked over the slipstream as the Marauder lunged up the highway entrance ramp, its engine hammering joyously. "First stop on the recruiting drive," Shepard replied, tossing him the datapad Griffin had given her. Putting her left forearm up on the top of the door, she leaned back with her right hand gripping the wheel at 12 o'clock and casually ran the Marauder up to its natural highway cruise, 120 miles an hour. Garrus looked at the first page of the document on the datapad and smiled. "Perfect," he said. "Shepard," Caden spoke up from the back, "do you even know where we're going? Neither one of us has ever seen this town before." "Not to worry, Caden," Shepard replied. Glancing back at him over her shoulder, she went on, "It so happens that this car has a very special navigation feature, one that was only fitted on the 1969 Mercury Marauder X-100, in fact. Not a lot of people know that." Caden smiled indulgently. "Oh, I can't wait for this now." "Watch and learn, Mr. Alenko," Shepard said. Then she reached to what looked like the radio and turned a knob. This revealed that it was, in fact, the radio, as antique rock music immediately poured from speakers throughout the car. Then she turned to her front seat passenger and said, "So, Garrus, where's the university from here?" "Tassoni, Liara. PhD, Xenoarchaeology, Thessia University. Postdoc, Paleoarchaeology, Vulcan Science Academy. Key publications: New Perspectives on the Prothean Extinction, Journal of Archaeology and Pre-Epical Studies, 2279. Notes on the Development of Pre-Contact Tushanka, Annalen der Xenobiologie, 2315. The Halo Riddle, with T. Shukrovas Archangel, J. Arc P.E.S., 2359. Forerunners of the Protheans, Fallen Civilizations in Deep History, Science, 2360. Consideration of Newly Discovered Evidence Regarding the Rachni War, with M. Solis, Nature, 2372. Chair, Department of Pre-Epical Studies, New Avalon University, Zeta Cygni. Current research concentration, Pre-Prothean Civilizations. Marcus Brody Hall, Room 140, New Avalon University. Sunlight streamed into one of Brody Hall's five big lecture halls on this, the last regular day of the 2406 summer term. Shepard slipped quietly into the room through the side door down front, just off the apron of the little stage on which the lecturer stood, then took up a position by the wall. She was within the professor's line of sight, but just barely, and said professor was in the midst of summing up the class for her students and didn't really register that someone else had entered. High up at the back of the room, a thin scattering of the 40 or so students present fidgeted restlessly, anxious for this last double-length lecture to be over, so they could get out into that sunshine and commence not quite studying for Friday's final exams just yet. Most, though, were clustered into a tighter group down front, paying close attention. A few took note of the stranger entering, but they, too, paid her little mind. She wasn't particularly arresting to look at, just a human woman in nondescript street clothes, and they were all intent on Professor Tassoni's summation. "Have kept up with the reading, you should have no trouble with Friday's final examination," the Asari professor said, then smiled slightly and added, "I am not one of those instructors who believe in throwing last-minute change-ups." A light laugh rippled around the room at Liara's wry remark. Shepard folded her arms, leaned back against the wall, and just took stock for a moment. Liara looked just the same as she had when Shepard had last seen her. Last seen her in a quiet moment, that is, not with the Normandy dying around them and all sense leaving the galaxy in a storm of blaster fire and betrayal. Tuesday, September 11th, 2288. WDF Normandy, SR-1. Amada System, Terminus Sector. Surrounded by flames, chaos, and the spine-chilling howl of the abandoned ship alarm, Liara ran full tilt through the wreckage of the mess hall, up the after companionway, and found the Normandy's commander just sealing her tactical armor's breather helmet in front of the auxiliary systems control array. "Shepard!" she cried. "Log boys ready for launch," Shepard said matter-of-factly, as if her immediate environment wasn't full of smoke and fire and wailing alarms. She pressed the holo key that fired said boy, the last will and testament of a dying starship, into space. Then she turned to face Liara and added with a dark wryness audible even through the speaker in her helmet, "For all anybody'll care." As Shepard spoke, Liara wrestled on her own helmet. The suit she was wearing was actually Shepard's backup. She hadn't been able to find her own in the sudden confusion of the attack, but they were near enough the same size that it would do in an emergency. And this, she reflected as the ship's tannoy system failed and the alarm stopped, was definitely an emergency. "What happened to command?" she asked when she had it on and sealed. "Where's the STF-17? Shepard stepped toward her, briskly and efficiently checking over her seals. Automatically, as she'd been trained when she came aboard this very ship, Liara returned the favor. While she worked, Shepard replied, "I don't know. All the channels have gone dead. Genom's not even bothering to jam them. There's just nobody there." She finished her check, all seals green, and stepped back to meet Liara's eyes through their visors. "I think this may be a lot bigger than just us," she said. Then she turned, pulled a fire extinguisher from its rack on the wall, and tossed it to Liara before setting to work at the auxiliary controls again. "Joker's still on the bridge," Liara reported as she applied the extinguisher, to no discernible effect, to the nearest fire. "He won't evacuate." She glanced aft at Shepard, whose back was to her as she worked at the controls, trying to restore emergency power. "I'm not leaving either," she added flatly. Against all odds, Shepard got some response out of the panel despite the condition of the ship. Panels and emergency lights flickered back to life. Then she turned and caught Liara by the shoulder, leaning over to make eye contact with her again. "I need you to make sure everybody else gets to the lifeboats," said Shepard intently. "I'll take care of Joker." Liara looked into her lover's blue-violet eyes and knew what she was leaving unspoken. Genom wouldn't be looking to take prisoners today. They'd almost certainly target the lifeboats. Someone would have to stay behind, marshal whatever remained of the ravaged Normandy's fighting strength, and try to cover those craft until they could escape to hyperspace. Whoever did that was almost certainly not coming back. And that was the kind of job Virginia Shepard would never leave to anyone else. She held Liara's gaze for a moment, making certain she understood, then turned and started making her way forward. "Shepard!" Liara called after her. And then, in a quieter voice, almost swallowed up by the background noise, "Jin..." The commander hesitated at the top of the companionway steps. For reasons she didn't really understand, Liara virtually always called her Shepard, even in intimate moments. She looked back over her shoulder. At this distance, her eyes were hidden by the reflections of the fires in her visor, and said flatly, "Liara, go. Now." Liara stood rooted for a second, searching for something, anything, she could say, and then she said the only thing she could in such a moment. "Aye, aye, Commander." Shepard nodded to her, turned, and disappeared into the smoke. Returning from her reverie, Shepard decided she preferred the sight of Liara in the present to the image of her from the past. She was dressed now not in ill-fitting space armor, but a neatly tailored semi-formal suit, the kind with a snug-fitting skirt that reached just below the knee. Discreetly glamorous, flattering but not titillating, it fitted the academic environment as well as it did the woman wearing it. Her face hadn't visibly changed apart from some very slight, very professional makeup work. At 232, she was still quite young for an Asari, and she still had the rounded cheeks and smooth complexion of youth. And, Shepard noticed with a private little smile, the same scattershot of pigmentation spots that exactly resembled, but which she insisted were not, freckles. "Some of you," she was saying to her students now, "have taken this course to fulfill the university's general science requirement, and I hope you have found it to be worth your time. Others of you will be going on to more advanced studies in the field. It's likely I'll be seeing those students again," she said, smiling. "For now," she went on, "as we prepare to go our separate ways, there's one thing I hope you will all keep in mind. It's a piece of wisdom I learned from a mentor of my own early in my career, and which I like to pass on to all of my freshman classes, and it is this." While she spoke, she'd been walking slowly from one side of the lecture stage to the other. Now she stopped in the middle, placed her hands on the lectern which stood there, and swept her eyes over her raptly attentive front rows before continuing. "Archaeology is the search for fact," she said plainly, then shook her head and added, "not truth. If truth is what you're looking for, the philosophy department is located in Tyree Hall." That got a small laugh. Liara waited for it to finish, then went on, "So forget any idea you have about lost cities, exotic travel, and digging up the galaxy. We do not follow maps to buried treasure, and X never, ever marks the spot. 70% of archaeology is done in the archives," she continued, resuming her slow pace, this time toward the left side of the stage. "Researching. Reading." As she approached to within a few feet, she seemed to notice the newcomer standing near the door for the first time. She gave the figure a cursory glance, then turned back toward the lectern and went on, "We cannot afford to take mythology at..." As if she'd suddenly realized what she'd just looked at, Liara froze, turned back, and looked again. "At face," she said, her mouth doing its best to go on automatically while the rest of her brain was more and more occupied, processing this sudden, unexpected, completely improbable new input. The woman leaning against the wall by the door, with her ankles crossed and her hands in the pockets of her black hoodie, giving her that heart-stabbingly familiar, knowing little smile, could not possibly be, but could not possibly be anyone other than, Virginia Eve Shepard.
"By the goddess," Liara whispered, feeling her face go cold. Had she been a fair-skinned human, she knew her color would have been draining away.
Shepard held her there with that little smile for a moment, then pushed herself away from the wall, took her hands out of her pockets, and held them open to either side as if to say, "Ta-da!" Liara stared at her for a moment longer, oblivious to the fact that all her students were, in turn, staring at her reaction. Then, giving herself entirely up to the moment, she darted down from the stage and into Shepard's arms. It was as if she'd never left them. She was in no position to say anything for a few very intense seconds, but then, unable to contain the words any longer, she broke away all of a quarter inch to murmur fervently, "Shepard, Shepard, by the goddess, you're alive. How can you possibly be alive?" "I guess you're happy to see me then, huh?" Shepard replied quietly. Liara made a sound that was half a laugh and half a snuffling sob, then kissed her again. The fingers of one hand raked through Shepherd's thick black hair. The others spread across her lower back, feeling the muscles there, smooth and hard under her jacket and shirt. Hard and soft, tough and tender, uncompromising and sentimental, methodical and brilliantly improvisational, Virginia Shepherd was not so much a woman as a walking collection of contrasts, all of which, over their 8 years together, Liara Tassoni had come to love as her own. And, she now remembered, she was an amazing kisser. That thought seemed to recall her to some awareness of where she was. Breaking away again, she took a half step back, her hands sliding around to take Shepherd's own, and she stood and just looked at her for a moment, her beaming face a darker blue than usual with the Asari equivalent of a furious blush. Which only deepened as her students gave her performance a round of applause, in some cases a standing ovation. Shepherd tilted her head toward the stage and quipped, "Maybe you'd better finish your lecture."
Yes, Liara replied. I'll just be a moment.
I'm not going anywhere, Shepherd told her. Smiling, Liara released her, returned to her lectern, and thanked her class wryly for their support, then concluded her lecture with a few further remarks about the true academic nature of archaeology, somewhat belied, in Shepherd's experience, by the number of firefights they'd had at dig sites in their time, how that only made it a more rewarding field of study for those truly inclined toward it, and how she hoped that she would see a number of them again in future semesters. When dismissed, the students near the front exited through the lower door, filing past Shepherd to do so. More than a few of them gave her a thumbs up, an ironic salute, and in a couple of cases a high five as they did so. One of them, a blonde human girl with an instantly likable conspiratorial smile, even stuck a gold star to the front of her hoodie next to the N7 logo on her way past. As they walked together down the hall toward Liara's office, Shepherd remarked, "So, you're giving Indy's lectures now?" Liara smiled. "A great human mathematician once said, plagiarize, but always remember to call it research." Nodding, Shepherd gave her a gentle elbow and replied, "Well, I think your students may have gotten more than their tuition's worth out of your class today." Blushing again, Liara agreed, "Yes, I fear it may have broken a few of their hearts." She waited to ask anything else that might be on her mind until they were in her office with the door shut. Then she seated herself behind her desk, gestured Shepherd to the chair usually occupied by students needing advice, and said, "Now, tell me everything." Out in the faculty parking lot, Arna Olenko stood with her ancestor and his Turian friend by Shepherd's black car and wondered how long they were supposed to wait. "I wonder how it's going," Caden mused. "Could go either way," said Garrus with a shrug. "You remember how hard she took it. For us, it's ancient history, but for Liara..." He trailed off. "Have to admit, it hit me harder than I was expecting, and I already knew she was back. I mean, I only found out yesterday, but still, I had a while to prepare myself. And anyway, I wasn't..." He searched for the words. "What Liara was to Shepherd," he finished. Caden nodded. "I still remember what it was like when I got to Valhalla and she was there to greet me. It was like, okay, so there is an afterlife, and there's a special one for soldiers. Of course she was going to be here." He chuckled. "Along with everybody else we lost that day. Press, Kelly, even the Normandy herself. But that first day, I only remember Shepherd giving me that little smirk and saying, 'For Christ's sake, Olenko, didn't I tell you to keep your sprocking head down?'" Garrus laughed. "Ha, not dead 5 minutes, and she's already busting your ass. Nice." "It was, actually. Comforting. I figure that's why she did it." He turned to Arna. This isn't freaking you out, is it?
Which part? Arna replied sarcastically. Hanging around in the middle of New Avalon wearing an Earth Force jumpsuit? Or listening to my late great-grandfather discuss the afterlife?
Good point, said Garrus. We're going to have to get you something else to wear.
I guess that's our next stop, Caden agreed.
Here she comes now.
As Shepard emerged from the building, he saw that Liara was with her and smiled.
Looks like it went okay.
Sure it's okay for you to just leave like this, Shepard was saying as they came within earshot.
It'll be fine, Liara assured her. I am the department chair, and I often have to leave abruptly for, Dean Michaels calls it emergency field work. SIDAC can easily proctor Friday's final exam without me. If we're not finished by September, he or Dr. Agnelli can cover for me.
Shepard nodded.
Okay, she said. I just don't want to risk damaging your career if...
Most Asari my age are still either mercenaries or strippers, Liara interrupted her, smiling. If I had to start my academic career entirely over right now, it would not be a significant hardship. I might even welcome the challenge.
Looking toward the car, she noticed the people waiting near it and brightened further.
Garrus, she said. It's good to see you again, and...
She blinked, realizing who the dark-haired man next to Garrus was, and sprang to hug him, though not as fiercely as she'd done with Shepard.
Caden!
It was with genuine delight that Caden returned her embrace. He'd once viewed her as something of a rival, but that had been a long, long time and many battles ago. They'd lost the Normandy and Shepard together, and that alone would have fixed an insoluble bond between them, albeit not in that way. All the adventures they'd shared before and after that loss had only reinforced it further. They introduced Arna, who seemed entirely at a loss. Then, as Shepard opened her car door, the others all looked at each other for a moment, wondering what to do about seat priority. Garrus preempted himself by declaring cheerfully, "Back seat, in the middle, on the hump. I called it." Which got a laugh and conceded shotgun to Liara, as seemed only right and proper. He wedged himself into the middle of the back seat, which, despite the hump in the floor necessitated by the car's rear-wheel drive shaft, was not much of a squeeze given the Marauder's vastness. The Alenkos climbed in on either side of him, Shepard and Liara got into the front, and they were off. Next on the agenda was a swing by Liara's downtown apartment to collect a few things she thought she would need. This was the work of only a few minutes, since she always kept a bag packed for just such eventualities, albeit these were usually sparked by some urgent new archaeological lead, not this. Then to a shopping center to get Arna some less conspicuous clothes. Then, as it was about that time, dinner at a teppanyaki joint near the edge of Turian Town that could meet everyone's protein chirality needs. By the time they got back to Matthew's memorial, it was coming on for dusk, and Arna seemed to have warmed to her new situation considerably. She'd been put much more at ease by the obvious camaraderie of Shepard and her old shipmates, the jokes, the war stories, and the way in which they generally made her feel welcome without seeming to have made a special effort to do so. "The thing that amazes me about New Avalon," she was saying as they re-entered Hangar 19, "is that it's so... normal. I mean, it's huge and dynamic and more diverse than any place on Earth except New York and maybe Kolkata, but..." She shook her head. "People are just... living their lives."
"You were expecting martial law?" said Griffin's voice mildly from the doorway to the office that was not an office.
Arna jumped slightly, looked a little embarrassed, and didn't reply. He didn't seem to have been expecting one anyway. He just shrugged and said, "Well, now you have something new to think about. Carry on." Then, smiling, he bowed slightly at the shoulders and added, "Professor Tassoni, I'm glad you decided to sign up."
"I wouldn't miss it," she told him.
"Excellent." Then, becoming briskly businesslike, he said, "Now, while you were out, I finished pulling together the rest of the equipment you're going to need, starting with a ship you can count on." "Is this it?" Shepard asked, looking up at the shiny Corellian freighter. "Dagger Disc," she read from its markings. "Looks like a pretty sweet ship." "I've never seen a YT-1300 with all her hull plating intact before." She looked from the ship to Griffin and conceded, "Might be a bit small, though." "No, not this one," Griffin said, then added with a smile, "She's got more tricks than are immediately apparent, but she doesn't have the space you'll need. Gets a bit cramped with anything more than 5 or 6 people aboard. No, your ride's this way." He led them through the faux office and into the high-tech conference room from before, then still further on, to a turbolift that went down to what appeared to be an underground monorail station. "Hey," said Shepard as the monorail pulled away from the platform, "what about my car?" "Don't worry, it'll be aboard before you are," Griffin told her. They rode for perhaps 5 minutes at a speed Arna didn't care to try and compute, before arriving at another, almost identical station. At this end, the line seemed to connect to a bustling underground complex. People in blue jumpsuits and ball caps moved purposefully through gleaming steel corridors, nodding to the chief as he and his group passed. He led them down 2 or 3 of these halls, past rooms whose functions Arna could only guess at, before keying them through one large double door. The room beyond that door was colossal, maybe 300 yards on a side, and with a ceiling that would have been soaringly high if it hadn't been absent altogether, revealing a black square of night sky. Massive hexlight panels bathed the area in light from high up on the walls. More blue-suited figures were at work here, handling supply containers and fueling hoses as they prepared the starship parked in the middle of the room for departure. This had the unmistakable lines of a Predator-class corvette, a venerable starship-class that had long been a common sight throughout known space. Hundreds, maybe thousands, had been built, and most were still in service. The World's Welfare Work Association had used them as Trokon transports for generations. Dozens served in the Wedge Defense Forces fleets, dozens more in Starfleet and the Royal Seleucian Navy. Even Earth Forces Navy had a handful. Outside various Federation members' armed services, quite a number were in private hands, and of course the Klingon Defense Force practically teemed with Burrell-class birds of prey. The Burrell was an originally unlicensed knockoff, nearly indistinguishable from the outside apart from the build quality, and occasionally the scale. This one was unlike any Arna had ever seen before, though. It wasn't thermocoated in the distinctive scarlet of the 3WA, nor WDF blue. It wasn't IPO white, Starfleet silver, Seleucian gray, or even that bilious matte green the Klingons preferred. It was black. The sleek, high-gloss ultra-black known since time immemorial, for reasons Arna did not know, as 261 Black, with a few discreet red and white go-faster stripes, and a name picked out in white microgramma capitals on the side of the snout-like nose module. Surprise. Shepard stood with arms folded and looked the ship over, nodding. "Nice," she said. Then, turning a wry look to Griffin, she added, "Still a little small, though." "Trust me, she's all you'll need," he told her. "You'll find complete technical specifications aboard, and I've recruited you an engineer who knows exactly what she can do." Leading her and the others around the back of the vessel, he indicated the markings above and below the impulse engine exhaust port, which declared that the ship's type and name were HV Surprise, and her home port of record was someplace called Harrisburg. "You're registered as a freelance hunter-investigator out of the independent Euphrates colony, out in the Kresge sector. All perfectly legitimate," he explained. As they walked past one of the ship's landing legs, he went on, "I'm giving you a completely free hand on this, Jen. Do whatever you have to do. Spend whatever you have to spend. Make whatever deals you feel are necessary to handle this threat. Find out where the collectors are coming from, Figure out what they want if possible, but regardless, stop them. Shepard stopped at the foot of the ramp, looked up into the ship, then turned to Griffin.
How much can I tell people about what we're trying to do? She asked.
Recruit whoever you feel you need. Tell them as much or as little as you think is necessary. Griffin replied at once. If that ends up meaning you have to be less than completely discreet and there's blowback to the IPO, I'll handle it.
Shepard nodded.
Noted, she said. I'll try not to get you into too much trouble, she added with a smile.
I'd appreciate that, he said with a wry grin, then went on seriously. But always remember, if there's a conflict between minimizing my service or getting the job done, the job always wins.
Wouldn't have it any other way, Shepard said, shaking his hand.
On my honor as an officer of the Wedge Defense Force, deceased, I solemnly swear...
The grin came back to Griffin's face as he replied, without letting go of her hand,
I will not panic.
I will get the girl, Shepard said, with a sly glance at Liara, before adding, or boy, or robot, or whatever.
I will kill the baddies, said Griffin.
I will save the entire planet, Shepard continued.
And above all, Griffin said,
whenever possible, Shepard put in, and then they raised their voices and shouted in unison, I will kick out the jams, motherfuckers! Eight balls never quit!
So saying, they converted their conventional handshake into an arm wrestler's grip, then a fingertip-to-fingertip hook, pulled that apart, bumped elbows, and high-fived before finishing together in a stage-hushed disclaimer voice, void where prohibited.
Griffin gave her a hug, said, Clear skies, Commander Shepard. Keep me posted. And then gave the rest of them a salute before clearing the docking bay.
Oh, man, Caden observed as they walked up the central corridor toward the bridge.
This is nice. I don't think I've ever seen a pred so polished before.
Everything's so shiny, Shepard agreed.
Well, you know me, Commander. I like to keep a tidy ship, said a voice from the bridge entrance.
Shepard looked up, grinned, and stepped toward the speaker with her hand outstretched.
Well, I will be goddamned, it's Greg Adams, she said, pumping the engineer's hand firmly and clapping him on the shoulder with her free hand.
You're looking good.
So are you, which, under the circumstances, is somewhat more unexpected, Adams replied dryly. I see you've already started putting the band back together.
That's the general plan, yeah.
She stepped aside so Adams' other old shipmates could greet him in turn, then introduced him to Arna.
This is, or was, I imagine he's been promoted, Senior Lieutenant Gregory Adams. He was the Normandy's chief engineer, best damn exotic hardware man in the fleet. Greg, this is Arna Olenko, Caden's great-granddaughter. She's going to be helping us out with the mission. I take it you've been briefed?
I have, yes. Sounds just like old times. High stakes and a real possibility that it'll all go horribly wrong, said Adams with a grin. How could I say no?
As they all entered the bridge, he continued, And there's no rank these days. I joined up again in 85 when the chief was putting the old outfit back together, but I retired after the 88 war, went into development. I've been a civilian consultant on a few special engineering projects for him and or the IPO over the years, including this one, he said, gesturing around to the bridge's perfectly fitted consoles. Like the rest of the ship they'd seen so far, everything in here was customized, sleek and shiny.
Once we're underway, I'll give you the nickel tour. For right now, though, we're ready to go whenever you give the word.
Shepard looked around the bridge, nodding appreciatively. Things were laid out differently here than she was used to, more like the traditional style employed by the WDF and Starfleet. The Normandy, both in Mortal Life and Valhalla, had been configured in something more akin to the Turian style, with the commander's station some distance abaft the actual business end. This was a lot more compact, but then she supposed it would have to be.
If this ship had something like the Normandy's Combat Information Center, it would have to be back at the after end of the neck, and directing the flight operations crew would have been like yelling up a storm drain. Still, it wasn't so bad. At least in this layout, she had somewhere to sit. She lowered herself into the center seat as the members of her crew so far fanned out to take various places around her. For the time being, Caden took the helm, with Garrus beside him at navigation. Arna, unsure quite what else to do, went to what a quick glance over the surprisingly intuitive holopanel controls showed her was the communications station, while Liara stationed herself at the sensor controls and started settling in with ease. "I better get back to tending the kettle," said Adams with a grin. "And if I didn't say it before, Commander, it's damn good to have you back." "Thank you kindly, Mr. Adams," said Shepard. "Good to be back," she added with a wink at Liara, who snickered and busied herself customizing her holopanels. Once she'd given Adams time to get below, she settled back in her seat. Yeah, she thought, a girl could get used to this after all those hours standing around the CIC. And said, "Well, ladies and gentlemen, what do you say? Let's go save the galaxy." This concludes Undocumented Features Future Imperfect Shepherd's 11, Act 1, Collection Agency. To be continued in Act 2, Shepherd's Privateers.